you, Jay.
All right, well, it is 6 o'clock on Wednesday, September 8th. We'll call the Planning Development and Extension Education Committee. Attendance purposes, Supervisors Beth, Gaffney, and Rodriguez are present. Supervisors Nudo and Bauer are excused. And we are in compliance with the Wisconsin Open Meetings laws. I know that those have been properly notified. Looks like you have record of that.
I do.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, so then we will jump right in to our featured program for tonight, the Aquatic Invasive Species Prevention in Kenosha County, and ties in a little bit with some things that have come before our committee recently on the planning and development side with the Silver Lake Protection District and things like that. So look forward to hearing about that tonight.
Excellent. Well, I will just open for those of you who haven't met Scott. Scott McComb is with us with the presentation tonight. He is the Southeastern Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist, and I believe he holds the record for the longest title in extension here. So welcome, Scott. We look forward to it, and if you can just, you know, let me know when to advance the slide, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for adding me. You know, it's I started back in May, which is like a really weird time to start with COVID going on. I'm extension, you know, so I'm already like isolated from everyone. So it's nice to see people and be in a room and interacting. So this is great. I have a really long title. I've tried to shorten it, but there's just like no way around it. Anyways, you want to go ahead and advance? Oh, that might have been the end.
Oh,
so
let me go back. Sorry,
there we go. So you can go ahead and go one forward. So today I just want to give you all a little bit of background on what I mean by aquatic invasive species, kind of so we're on the same page. And then I want to get into what's called the Lake Monitoring and Protection Network. That's how my position is funded through the state of Wisconsin. And then through that, some of the programs I run, so that by the time you're done with this, you know a little bit more about what the Southeast Wisconsin AIS outreach specialist does. So when we're talking about invasives, we're talking about any non-indigenous species whose introduction can cause some sort of impact to our ecosystem. And by ecosystem, I mean humans, environment, economy. There's some examples there on the left. What we're striving for is there on the right. Kenosha is a really great county, with recreation, agriculture. There's so many different facets of the county that involve water. So there's no way around looking at invasive species and their impacts. Whether it's causing impacts to agricultural productivity, economic impacts that way, social impacts, when you get those big mats of weeds on the beach, that impacts how people, if they want to use that beach or not. And then we have the environmental impacts. And so when a non-native species comes in, it's essentially overtaking the natives. It's crowding them out and causing that decline. And so that's going to create a degraded habitat for our fisheries and other plants. So there's different pathways invasive species have entered into this area. But I've been told that southeastern Wisconsin is like ground zero for invasive species, which is like unfortunate, but I think it's also a really great opportunity with a position like mine. I do kind of want to step back. This position has been around for 2 years, and I think COVID kind of knocked it back a little bit, so it was already struggling to take off, and so I feel like I'm stepping in and I'm kind of building it up from the ground here. There's invasive species throughout the county. The black lines represent waters invaded by the rusty crayfish. And when I say invaded, I'm not saying like you're gonna stick your hand in the water and pull, 20 crayfish out. But they're there and they're causing some sort of disturbance. We have the Eurasian water milfoil and the, that's creating those dense mats like you might see along Lake Michigan there, it's in the green. And then we have the curly pondweed, the lasagna noodle of the lakes in the red there. And these are just three that I found. We can find, there's probably 20 to 30 more invasive species So this map is actually publicly accessible on the DNR website. It's their Water Surface Viewer. If you're ever interested in invasive species, there's something called the Wisconsin Surface Grant. If you're wondering who's receiving grants, water quality information, polluted rivers and lakes, all that information about water quality can be found there. It's a great little website if you're interested in that stuff. That's good. So invasive species have come through into our area through various means, but now they're kind of being spread around through recreationists. And so when we talk about invasive species, we're really talking about two things that can be taken. Prevention actions, so any kind of action that's taken to stop the introduction or spread. That's kind of my position, and what's my position is about. It's education, monitoring, and then we kind of go over the DNR side, which is kind of more enforcement. Then we have control actions, which are there to eliminate or reduce. And that's where we're coming in there with chemical herbicides, mowing, releasing beetles, little insects to control populations. This is something we use in the invasive industry. It's the invasion curve, which you're seeing time on the bottom, and then you're seeing control cost on the y-axis and area infested. So basically, once an invasive species comes in, and let's say there's no action taken over time, it's going to get larger, and the cost to control it is going to get worse. What you see in the blocks, prevention, eradication, and such, are the management strategies. And so I focus really on the prevention and the early detection, so that we're preventing the spread, but we're also trying to get in there when we see something new and being able to take care of it and eradicate that. Once it kind of gets to the containment and to the long-term management, that's when things are getting into the million and billion-dollar cost. I think I read something recently that it costs the United States $26 billion annually in control measures. So we're not on that scale, but if you kind of break it down to the county level, I mean, you could easily say that millions are spent every year treating invasive species on our lakes. And so, on the other hand, we have prevention, which is tens of thousands of dollars that take, that costs for someone to go out there and provide education and doing some monitoring. Some more activities that I'll get into in a second. So that's why, prevention is, like the old saying goes, prevention is worth an ounce of, or an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It definitely applies in this situation. So because of that, the state of Wisconsin actually has a very great AIS program. I'm going to say AIS instead of aquatic invasive species, and it's actually one of the best. I think Minnesota and Wisconsin have probably some of the best AIS related departments and information they're putting down from the state to the counties and the municipalities. And so they've created this Lake Monitoring and Protection Network. You can go ahead and advance. It's basically the legislature, through the Wisconsin Surface Grant Program, provides $1 million in annual support, about $13,000, which is about the average for the whole entire state. Is coming into Kenosha County. And with this money, it's to provide technical assistance to prevent the spread of AIS and provide education related to the impacts and prevention, and then also conducting lake monitoring. So the state established this program. They basically give the counties money, and they say, and then you're going to have to do, we'll develop the programming, you go ahead and then implement it. And so the big thing with this network is collaboration. So we have, these three different groups. So we have the Wisconsin DNR, we have the participants, which include our lakes and rivers groups, the rehabilitation districts, community groups, community members, and then we have the cooperators. So that'd be, me, the designated agent, but it could also be a county or tribal group. And so these are some of the programs that that are written into the grant. So the education outreach, there's watercraft inspection programs, there's the purple loosestrife biocontrol where we grow little beetles and put them out on purple loosestrife plants to help kind of munch away the purple loosestrife and control that, ensuring signage, proper signage at boat launches, public boat launches. Then we also offer targeted efforts where we're, looking to get the message out specifically to recreationists or anglers. Or coming up, we have waterfowl hunting at the end of September, so I'm going to be going out and waterfowl hunting groups. just to know that, you know, how they can play a role in preventing aquatic invasive species. And then on the other side of that, we have monitoring. We offer a couple, you know, Project Red, which is riverine early detection. Basically, it's getting out into rivers and just going out and seeing what AIS are present. It's the same thing with Snapshot Day, but that's more lake focused. And so that's just kind of like a one-off to get citizens out there. We also have the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network. And we have this established on almost every lake. We have someone going out collecting information about water quality. They'll put the Secchi disc in the water to see, you know, how turbulent the water is. They'll also do ice on, ice off observations and seeing what kind of AIS are present. Then lastly is early detection work, which I'll talk about here in a second. But those are some of the programs that are associated with this grant program. And so these are the roles. So Wisconsin DNR, they're putting out the guidance on these programs. They're going through and, you know, updating them as needed. They're also providing the technical expertise and managing the data that's collected. And then we have me, where I am training and recruiting participants, managing data supplies, helping people apply those water surface grant, you know, getting them whatever they need to actually participate in these programs. And then we have the participants who are actually, you know, running the show, running the programs. I'm just there to help facilitate, basically. So my role, I'm Southeast Wisconsin, so I'm covering Kenosha, Racine, and Milwaukee counties. So I think there's added benefit to the fact that I'm covering the region. There's a lot of carryover, and, you know, what's going on in Racine is very similar to what's going on in Kenosha, the same type of relationship we have. You know, very urban down by the lake and agricultural, kind of like lake communities, more in the western part of the state, or the county, excuse me. And so I think there's a lot of, you know, relationship building within the three counties that is added to this position. And then for me, I actually am affiliated with Wisconsin Sea Grant. And so that's how I'm connected into Extension. Wisconsin Sea Grant is through the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's a statewide program. So it's headquartered in Madison, but we have satellite locations. So I'm here in Bristol. We have people in like Duluth, Green Bay, all across the state doing applied research, working with communities on things like coastal engineering, fisheries, tourism, water quality. So I'm also in collaboration with this other network of researchers out there that are looking at this stuff. Very similar to Extension, where they're doing the research, but then they're doing this applied research where they're trying to make it, you know, take that information, bring it down to the community, making sure it's useful. So that's kind of something that I bring into this position. Okay, next. So just a little bit more into the protection programs, kind of give you an update on what I've done so far in the, let's see, 4 months since I've been aboard. And just some of the things I'd like to kind of do going forward. And if you have any input, I am all ears. I work a lot with Mark Jenk, the conservationist here in the county. And so we have an advisory council for the Southeast region. So conservationists from each one of the counties, plus a couple local stakeholders that kind of give me input and guidance on where to go. But I am always open to hearing, you know, if there's little issues going on and how I can, you know, best serve, you know, Kenosha County and the other counties. So something I started off with was boat landing signage. There's Simmons Island Marina right there, making sure that they have just the prevent the spread message. You know, that's a really easy way just for boaters to see, like, hey, these are the steps I can take to prevent the spread of invasive species. And I'm going to tell you them real quick right now because they're so easy. It's inspect, remove, drain, and never move. So inspect your watercraft. Remove any plants, animals, seaweed, any of that stuff. Drain all the water and never move live bait. So that's actually law here in Wisconsin. So with the Clean Boats, Clean Water Inspection Program, which I'll talk about next, that's the message they're trying to get out to voters. Just giving them the education to know that, hey, you know, you can play a role in preventing the spread of invasive species just by taking care of your boat, essentially. You know, when you pull all the water and taking those weeds off, I mean, that's going to make sure that your boat isn't, you know, rusted or starting to break down after years. So I started going around and to our different landings. I believe there's over 40 lakes here in Lakes and Ponds in Kenosha County. I'm focusing more on the publicly accessible lakes, so I've checked 24 of the 29 landings. And what I really like about that is it's given me a chance to see the lakes on the ground instead of, you know, the aerial on the computer. And that's such a different experience. I've run into boaters, I've run into anglers, I've run into a city administrator, visiting boaters. And so I'm hearing what they're, you know, I'm talking to them about aquatic invasive species and getting their perspective. So this has probably been one of the great, best projects to start out with this, with my position, because I'm really understanding what's going on at the local level, you know, at these lakes, and taking that forward as I build this program out. So the next one. So this is the Clean Boats, Clean Waters. Picture there is of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. They have partnered with us for the last couple years through the Water Surface Grant. So the Water Surface Grant, basically, if you apply for the grant, you're guaranteed to get a little bit of money so that you can have paid volunteers doing these boater inspection programs where they're, you know, talking to boaters about AIS. And so, unfortunately, things didn't work out for them for the 2021 season, so we didn't really have too many people out in Kenosha County. I was able to get out for 4 hours this year, and I got to talk to 34 boaters. And that doesn't seem like much, but if you think about it, 34 boaters, and if maybe one talks to somebody else about it, I mean. And then, yeah.
What led to only 4 hours in our county?
So I was doing what's called a special study for the Clean Boats, Clean Water program, where they're actually trying to revamp their message, and so they want to know what part of their message is getting through to people. So I, you know, did the normal spiel I have to talk to voters, but then I asked them kind of like what they know. And so we try to do those in 4 hour blocks. And so, okay.
So that was just one day then, one afternoon?
That was just one day. I talked to 34 boards. It was just a Saturday morning kind of a thing. And so looking for next year, I'm looking to get inspectors on all of our popular lakes, you know, Silver Lake, Elizabeth, Mary, you know, those big lakes, definitely on Lake Michigan. And then trying to get someone on a rotating basis through kind of our lesser, our smaller lakes. I've had a couple of conversations. I was talking to the Haddock City manager. And, you know, for them to staff someone every year at a lake, they're just worried that it's going to burn out their little boaters. Because a lot of these lakes, it is just the residents and, you know, maybe some area people coming over. And so in that case, you know, I'm looking to, can we get someone on the lake maybe on the 4th of July weekend, you know, a very popular weekend, and then kind of just like give the lake a rest until next year or 2 years from now. So that's kind of like what I was thinking there. And then another thing I was thinking is if we can get like partnerships with a couple of different cities where they can, we can go for the Clean Boats, Clean Water Surface Grant money, and then they can chip in a little bit and we can kind of have someone rotate around. So one weekend they're at, you know, Hooker Lake, next weekend they're at Montgomery Lake, you know, and they're, we're getting that coverage throughout the summer. So those are some of the things I'm doing with the inspection program. Next slide. Monitoring. So unfortunately, I had to go out last week to Camp Lake. They found Starry Stonewort. That's up there in the top left. But again, you know, silver lining there, I got to go inspect 11 different area lakes just to make sure Starry Stonewort hasn't spread. But I got to inspect 11 other lakes to see what the status was with invasive species there. I did find 4 new ones. And, you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a great that I found it, but it's bad that I found it. It's great because now we can get to work on it. I'm then in contact with the DNR, and they're rolling out their response framework to going in there, working with the lake group, whoever manages the lake, and seeing coming up with management solutions so that we can contain it to that lake and start treating it right away. And then the other thing I talked about is the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network. With that, I'm hoping to check in. We already have you know, coverage on most lakes in the county, but I want to make sure we have it on every single lake so that we're recording that change through time, that we're seeing, you know, 2001, 2002, you know, we're seeing how the AIS is either growing or declining over time, which is just, you know, data is valuable for that information. But also, real quick, the number of participants we have participating in stuff like the monitoring and the inspection program help increase the amount of money the state will give to the county. So if we increase the participation, they'll increase the funding.
And then coming up this fall, I have a talk with the Racine Kenosha Master Gardeners Association, just talking to them about something called organisms of trade, just kind of how gardening, how invasive species can enter through, you know, whether it's like the plants they plant in the ground, some of them, you know, sometimes turn out to be invasive, or maybe they're not invasive in Illinois, but they are here in Wisconsin. So, you know, providing them with that information. And then the Kenosha Sports Fishing and Conservation Association is having their annual Pike River cleanup. I'm going to take a little bit of time in the beginning to talk about that while they're out there, you know, walking up and down the Pike River. And then moving forward, purple loosestrife biocontrol, raising beetles and mapping locations so that I can go recruit people to just, you know, go out and release these beetles. And like, this is by far my favorite control method because there's no chemicals involved and no machinery. You just, I raise these beetles, give them to the groups, the lake association, whoever it is, it could be a school, class two. They go out, release these beetles, and they can watch as they munch down on the purple loosestrife. Another issue I saw, visiting boaters, I think that's one of the big issues in this area. So talking with our neighbors in Illinois and my colleague over in Walworth County, I'm coming with ways we can kind of work at targeting the visiting boaters and the role that they can play in AIS prevention. And then I'd also like to start as tracking our efforts, so I talked about that with lake monitoring, but also, you know, giving some sort of healthy water scorecard so that we can see over time, you know, how my efforts and the lake's efforts, the participation efforts, are impacting the way the presence of AIS. Is it going up? Is it going down? You know, do we need to improve our message? Is our message on point? You know, some sort of evaluation, essentially. And then last thing is build capacity. I am part-time, and I cover three counties, so my time is really strapped, and so that's something going forward that I'd like to do to expand. That's all I have. I don't know if you all have any questions or any thoughts.
The aqua taps that you ordered to throw in off your boater on the shore on the weeds early in the spring, are they hard on the lake or no?
I am not too familiar with that. I'd have to talk to the DNR. That's more of into the control side of things.
Okay.
But I can say I've seen mixed results on using herbicides, especially the long-term efficacy of them. For example, the starry stonewort population, there's lakes in northern Wisconsin that I've treated with herbicide. It actually ended up kind of enraging the stonewort so that the next year they actually had a worse population in comparison to another lake that didn't treat it at all. So there's mixed results. So
is your work primarily with Inland Lakes, or do you work, you know, with the Great Lakes and things like that as well?
Yeah, so it's both. So Inland Lakes and Great Lakes. The cool thing about the Sea Grant is they're very much like coastline focused, and so you know, I do different activities on the Great Lakes. You know, I'm still trying to tap into like the local events. I'd like to get a little bit better presence at that. We were able to get some people over at San Orama, Racine County. I've done a couple events in Milwaukee. So if you know any like harbor type events here in Kenosha, I'd love to hear them. You know, I'm always looking for opportunities to kind of connect more with some different groups too, you know, like this setting.
I know the health department throughout the summer publishes results, I think typically weekly on the website as far as like beach quality and things like that. Does that fall within your category at all, or is that something completely different?
That's a little bit outside of my scope.
Yeah.
But that does sound interesting.
You did mention at the end that you're part-time. How many hours do you have to dedicate to this role?
So I'm 20 hours
20.
For the three, which is kind of nice because, you know, if I go to a conference, I'm essentially covering that for three different counties. So it's saving in the long run the resources. But I mean, if you average it out, it's like 6 hours a week to Kenosha County. I did a little back of the envelope estimate, and I've essentially worked three full-time weeks so far in this position for Kenosha County. But, you know, this is just the beginning. I'm getting my feet wet. I'm understanding what the local issues are. And then also getting to know the programs a little bit better, and I just, you know, every year is just going to build on itself. I guess to give you some history on me, I used to be a regional planner. I'm from Wisconsin, but I lived out in Utah for the last 7 years. Finished my master's in, I was a regional planner, and so I came back here to be my family, and so I'm hoping to, you know, to create roots here, so I'm not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
What will you do when it's ice fishing time? And of course, we have many ice fishermen out there. Do you go out on the lake?
I will not go out on the lakes, but what we could do is do like our boat inspection. You know, like our boat inspection, we go out onto boat ramps, so wherever the public access is. As far as doing that in the wintertime, I'm not so sure I want to go sit out in that cold weather. But something we do instead is we work with like bait shop owners, especially during winter when things kind of slow down from the summer season is going, and talk to them. Providing them with some signage they can put up in the store, and some prompts, you know, that they can say, you know, when a customer comes in, you know, getting, you know, bait or whatever, they can, you know, say like, oh, okay, where are you headed? You know, oh, you're headed to bed. Like, oh, you know, I hear there's Eurasian water milfoil over there. You know, be sure to, like, you know, wash your boat afterwards or whatever it is. I think it's, you know, I'm not too familiar with the ice fishing yet. My mindset isn't into winter. So I'm not quite sure, you know, as far as what the state has, we don't have anything specific to ice fishing. That's definitely something to think about, so thank you.
Okay. My family, some of the boys ice fish.
Yeah. I know it's a little bit different because, so with ice fishing, you're not taking a piece of equipment, you know, like a boat out in the water where there's weeds and it's collecting them. You know, you're just, you know, dropping a line in a hole, basically. And so we don't have, I think, the risk of, like, transporting invasive species is a lot less. Also, I'm not quite sure, as far as I know, most species are dormant during the winter time. So, you know, I guess in a scenario, they could, you know, snarl up some weeds that have some seeds in them and carry them, but most likely people will probably, like, put that stuff on the side. But they don't want their lines all picked up with weeds or whatever it is.
You had mentioned southeastern Wisconsin is kind of a hot spot, mm-hmm. Ground zero. What would you attribute that to? Is it because we're so close to Illinois or places that may not have as robust of programs as ours here?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of it, and I think also the population and the industries. I mean, look at this area for the transportation on the Great Lakes. That was a really big pathway for invasive species, you know, a long time ago with the ships in the ballast waters, collecting ballast waters, you know, over in Asia and Europe, bringing that over and then emptying it into the Great Lakes. And so I think that was, you know, a really big factor in seeing invasive species in this area, as opposed to, say, like, Northern Wisconsin, that's off the coastline.
When does the grant expire? The grant that you're employed through?
It's calendar year.
Okay.
So right now, coming up, right around now is November 1st is when applications are due for 2022. So I'm keeping that going for Fresh County.
So you may or may not be here in the spring.
I mean, it's basically up to the county, right, if they want to sign that agreement. But yeah.
Is there a county cost?
Nope.
What? I can't. $14,000, less than $14,000 that comes to Kenosha County is not much.
Mm.
How much can we do with that? I know you said you did some signage, some things like that. What is the bulk of that money going towards? And is it something that, come budget season, which we're headed into, we as a county need to look into that, as a county board, look into preserving our lakes alongside, you know, yourself and your team.
Sorry, can I say that again?
Yeah, so you get $14,000 roughly. Is that enough? Because to me, government's good at one thing, it's spending money, and spending money poorly, right?
Yeah.
And some of that's just when municipalities approach, you know, private business because they need something, like, you know, somebody who does science or whatever. Sometimes the dollar signs are seen, right? Oh, that's government. They're gonna, you know, they'll spend more than maybe a private citizen will. is that $14,000 enough? I mean, what are we spending that on now besides signage?
The money goes towards me facilitating these programs. So signage is one of them, but it's also getting the equipment, training volunteers, recruiting volunteers, working on outreach and educational messages, so social media presence, so different avenues. And it's really kind of, there's a lot I can do with this position, but it does come down to time. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, when I, can present here and you guys can give an impact, and I can talk to Mark and the advisory council, I can get impact on where to kind of steer my resources, and then I can give them feedback on what I think is working. Do I think that's enough money? I think it will get by. The job will get done. I'll do my best effort to get out as much as I can. Because, I don't do it for money. I do it because I care about the environment. And I think the best way to do that is through involving people and collaborating. And so I really believe in this program. But
is there a dollar amount? Did you spend all $14,000 this year? Or are you on track to spend most of that money?
I'm not too involved with my budget. So I have someone, Tim Campbell. He is my supervisor through Wisconsin Sea Grant. He kind of takes care of that stuff. Unfortunately, I haven't been in my job long enough where I know where the dollars and cents are going. But my guess is it's mostly going towards just staff time paying for me. And actually, because the signage, the DNR provides.
Okay.
The county does not spend any money. Essentially it's like, instead of the money going to the county and the county is like hire someone out, it's like the money is going towards to Sea Grant. There's like some sort of MOU or signed by the county saying it can go there. So Kenosha County is not spending any money, maybe some time from ARP, I guess.
So that $14,000 really isn't, it's going towards education indirectly through, it's going to pay you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, so I guess you could say it's indirect kind of.
Good. Any other questions for Scott?
Dan and I serve on another land and water committee, and we asked last time, a couple weeks ago, what is happening with the weeds they're cutting out of Paddock Lake and Silver Lake, and they said they take them up on shore, drain them, and they take them out to the farm fields and mm-hmm. just let them dry. Mm-hmm. This is not harmful to the farm fields?
I am not a agriculturalist, so I cannot give you 100%, but I know that there's a lot of phosphorus and nitrogen in those plants, and I've been tempted to take some of that and put it in my own garden as fertilizer. It's more so, I don't know.
Okay.
But
just a quick comment on it. As long as they didn't apply any herbicides to control it, then probably it should be safe. So most of the time when you apply herbicides in aquatic species control, they have a longer residue. And when you transport it or ship it to your garden soil or a farm soil, those herbicides can actually get leached into the soil and can bind to the soil for a long time. So if the control measure is just simply mechanical, then it should be pretty much safe. But I really don't know the impact if you have a horse or a cow that is feeding onto it, then I really don't know what's going to be the impact on that. But if it's just going to be benefit for the plants, absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And what a great way to take these plants, and then we get this second use out of them by putting them on a field. And a great way instead of throwing them in the dumpers and trying to get them.
But one specific plant that I have to caution, which is kind of like a semi-aquatic, is the Phragmites. I would not recommend dumping the Phragmites in a marshy areas into the farm field. Phragmites is a very notorious species that can propagate easily, both in upland and wetland. Predominantly it's in upland, but there are some progenies, there are some traits of those Phragmites can also survive in upland sites too. There are some genetic variations there as well, so, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, well, Scott, thank you. So you've been in your role fairly early. We appreciate you jumping in and helping conserve one of these crown jewels of our county, our waterways, so thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And send an email, give me a call if you have any, you know, ideas or anything that comes up. I'm happy to be available.
Great. And typically for these featured programs, I always ask that the presenter email it out to the entire committee and youth and governance. If you'd be able to email your presentation or even just through Terry, if you send it to Terry and she could send it to the rest of us. That way, because there are some committee members that aren't here and it's always nice to have something to refer you back to. So thank you very much. All right, well, if that concludes our number two, our featured programs, then we can move on to number three. Any other educator or program updates?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. We have Mary and VJ with us this evening, and then I will be sharing a couple of other educator updates. So whoever wants to go first.
I can jump in.
Great.
Now that we're post-Labor Day, I have a lot of new programming that will be kicking off. Some of it's in person with some populations that have specifically asked for us to come in person just due to living situations and access to internet and all of those things. So we'll be starting with a group at the Kenosha Correctional Center, as well at the Southeastern Veterans Home, which is a transitional living facility. And then some of the other programming is with parents and caregivers of Head Start programming within KUSD and also West OSHA. And then later on in the fall, doing some more semi-general programming. One is that I presented on back in July. We're doing another series of the Encouraging Financial Conversations with local helping professionals, and then also doing some programming specifically with W-2 staff in the area. One thing that I brought that I just wanted to let everyone know, Kenosha County is having an upcoming Child Support Family Court FAQ session, or it's two sessions because we're doing it virtually, so we're breaking it up just because that's a long day on a Zoom. But this is something directed toward any professionals that serve families. So it is available, the registration is open now, so if any of you are interested in coming just to kind of see what it's like to hear some of the different presenters, or if you work with or know other people that work with basically family serving professionals, it's pretty open. We're trying to catch anyone and everyone in the community that works with families that could benefit from some more information about child support, family court, and just some of the local resources that are tied into that. So that's something I can also forward to Terry as far as having like the online flyer version that you can just click and it'll take you right into the registration. But that is two Tuesdays in early October. That's all for me.
Thanks, Mary. Appreciate your work in those areas. Thank you.
So in the horticulture world, a lot of things going on, but the biggest news is the drought impact in Kenosha County. So if you look, actually, there are two folds to it. We had an unusual warm spring, and it was a dry spring. The spring has really started in March, mid-March, and the temperatures started to spike, but we didn't have enough rain. So Kenosha County was literally under extreme drought in July. And then it kind of, you know, scaled down to severe drought. So far, we had, if you look at the number of days that has been above 85 degrees, this year it's been exceptionally, we have been above more than 50 days above 85 degrees. In the past, we used to have in the range from 30 to 45, and we were under zone of 5 in terms of heat hardiness. Now, we are actually close in the middle of Illinois, actually, which are in the zone of 6. So, what is the story is that? This is not unusual, for us, because we've been actually, there is a lot of computer models that has been already predicted that, you know, as every year goes by, we're going to face a lot of these, you know, unusual heat impact. And again, the UN climate report also kind of, you know, confirms all these things. So we are right now seeing the impact of this heat effect on many plants. Many of our Wisconsin native plants have been succumbed to this heat stress. Even if you take a walk at our KCC, many of the birch trees, the native birch trees, they all stressed out, they burnt out. And so they're gonna take up quite a bit beat in the winter, and they're gonna further get stressed out. So this is not a good year for many ornamental trees, shrubs, including our lawn grasses and many perennials, herbaceous perennials. So, but some species thrive. Some species really like this hot weather, including our weeds and invasive plants. And believe me or not, the apple industry is booming, because the reason is, one of the biggest side effect of the apple industry is the negative impact is the rain, because the rain triggers a disease called apple scab. Since this year, we didn't have that much of enough spring rain, many apple trees, including our ornamental crab apples, they tend to have the leaves throughout the summertime without any infection. So this is one of the latest reports shared by the Wisconsin Department of Ag that talks about Wisconsin's agriculture industry, including apple industries in Wisconsin, and they predicted that this year is going to be a big booming for apple industries. So this magazine tells you quite a bit about the significance or economic significance of Wisconsin agriculture, so which might be coming in handy for you guys down the road if you want to talk about how Wisconsin is growing. And so, so another impact of this, the drought impact that we're having is that in specifically in Kenosha County, we have alarming situation of gypsy moth population. In the past few years, we never heard about gypsy moth. Now, the population has spiked quite a bit. We got many complaints from Kenosha County residents. The reason is, due to the lack of spring rain, usually the spring rain triggers a fungal diseases that wipes out the gypsy moth population. Now, this time, we don't have it. And plus the virus that's supposed to knock out the gypsy moth, in addition to the fungal disease, also kind of deactivated because of the lack of rain. So this year, including many spruce trees, many oak trees, they all suffered quite a bit because of the gypsy moth. And the interesting thing is that the rest of the state didn't have that much of gypsy moth population compared to Kenosha County, which is very surprising to me. So that's another important thing to be aware about it. And more than about like one third of our calls this year that we got from the consumers are related to lawn issues, because many times people are highly concerned about, you know, why my lawn grasses have been suffering out, why there is a lot of dead patches and stuff like that. And we even keep on telling it's because of the heat stress, you know, fall is a great time. So that is actually, I'm planning on writing a column for this month, how to renovate your lawn. So that's the thing. But the native prairies, they're doing exceptionally very well. They are the only one actually that can able to heat, withstand this heat, and because they have the long root, they're, you know, they're well established, so they're doing amazing very well. Now, in besides of all these things, in total we got about close to 650 calls and email inquiries in the Southeast Wisconsin area this until so far right now. And again, most of the calls are related to the heat and drought stress impact that we have right now. Last month, on August 24th, we hosted an urban forestry training program in Southeast Wisconsin. We hosted it in Racine County, and both for Kenosha and Racine together. And we had more than about 20 urban foresters participate in it. We had a speaker from UW Stevens Point, Dr. Richard Howard. He came in and presented to us about the impact of the construction that's going to have on, you know, the lodge trees, how to preserve some of the lodge trees when you do have these constructions. It might be a driveway or, you know, highway constructions, how to preserve those tree roots. So it was a very enlightening talk. So many of our Kenosha County Public Parks Department and Racine County Parks Department, they participated in the program as well too. I think that's pretty much, you know, about so far happening up.
Thank you, PJ. Appreciate it. I hardly had to cut my grass this summer, and I actually am not complaining about it. So, but obviously there are downsides to the drought, many downsides. So thank you for that information.
I think I missed the last part. Can we start from the beginning?
Sure. Well, we'll send it to you in an email. How does that sound good? glad you're able to make it. I know you weren't sure if you were able to, so thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, Terry, any other educator updates?
Yes, I have updates on 4-H. So registration opened for the new year, so share among your networks. We're working on setting up recognition and awards banquets and some of the other annual events that kick off the new year. I'm sort of learning the ropes of these positions that I'm not real familiar with, being new in the AED role, and really looking forward to diving in and working more with 4-H families and volunteers to learn about their needs. We've been pretty much limping along with some part-time allocations and shared positions with Jen Reese. So in my updates, I'll share the posting for that. So that is 4-H. Amy Grile shared some community development updates, which I will just remove this so you don't have to see my messy email screen. And she has been super busy working on lots of different projects. She could not be with us this evening, but she wanted me to share a few things here about what she is doing. And I had it up. There they are. Everything changed with email when my position changed. So her planning continues with her colleagues from CABA, the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, United Way, and Kenosha County Planning and Development, to see when and how a summit can be planned and aligned with efforts that support municipalities to develop more housing units for all income levels. So she and this collaborative brought some partners together to host an affordable housing summit on August 6th. And she collected some data about local rental rates and average medium income formulas that established the tax credit levels for Section 2 affordable housing units. Amy did publish a column on Labor Day, about labor availability that she had solicited feedback from you all on last. So that was an August 14th publication. She's working on an entrepreneur training program targeting social enterprise, nonprofits, and creative arts-based business operators in partnership with the Kenosha Creative Space. She is working with organizers on a multi-state conference targeting watershed protection coordinators that work with farmers and ag producers. Amy and Extension collaborators have been asked to deliver her leadership training program called Relational Network, which she's working on publishing regarding. This is a new research-based curriculum that she's developing or co-developing to teach principles of professional relationship building as a means to navigate complex social problems. She's assisting multiple pantries and emergency response agencies coordinate operations with the aim, among many things, of better aligning emergency food programs. That's some ongoing work, and she's looking forward to hosting that meeting with the county executive's office in September. Those are all of the educator. Oh, nope, I have one more from Erica Ness, who is in Madison with her new colleague cohort training. She said, YIG reps are embarking on a project to promote mental health resources and reduce the stigma of mental health for youth in Kenosha. YAR, or Youth as Resources, is about to have their first meeting September 21st, and the first round of funding applications are due October 12th. The CIFAR NEA grant for Career and Education Pathways has been officially approved, and we are starting to work with Kenosha Public Library and other community partners to plan that program. Those are educator updates.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other program or educator updates then. Terry, I know you've been in your role, officially been in your role for a very short time, but
yeah.
Glad to have you and
thank
hear
you.
Any updates that you have for us.
Sure. My main focus has been trying to get acclimated on several different systems in, you know, each county with the different requirements, but we have posted the, I think I shared this last time we were about to post, the Foodwise Administrator, so my former role and the role I think of it as my side gig right now, because I'm still working that until we get someone in that role. That position closes on 9/15, and the search and screen committee has been selected, and dates are established for all interviews for that position. I anticipate posting the 4-H educator position either Friday afternoon, I'm really hoping, probably more like early next week, because I have a few budget questions. And then I have a discussion Friday morning with Heidi Johnson, who is our institute director for, or the director for the Ag Institute, regarding getting Lee Presley's position back in, that split position that we had previously shared with Racine County for an ag educator role. And Heidi and Bev had had some conversations previously about that, the direction for that. So I have a few questions before I can start that process, figure out the search and screen committees, but all of those things are moving along. Those are very large priorities. I feel like I'm sort of going to be doing some triage in the 4-H program, because I think a lot of people have just felt not real connected with that limited time allocation of educator. And Jen Reese is really pretty much 90% in Racine County. So our plan to manage that is to move some responsibilities to shared among April. Our support staff, she's helping with new registrations to take that off of Jen's plate. Erica Ness, our positive youth development, will be stepping in, doing some volunteer training. And I'm observing to learn as much as I can, and I'm meeting with some of the council members. Actually, I have a meeting tomorrow. So if anybody has 4-H connections that have felt some pain, please, you know, feel free to share with them that we recognize that, and that is a top priority for me at this time. Just having a lot of fun moving around between all the offices, learning the ropes, and just really honored to be working with this amazing staff. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Terry. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe our plan is to do our committee's budget hearing. You know, we've been talking about upcoming budgets next month. So that would be October 13th. And historically, what this committee has done is skipped the typical UW Extension portion, and we've done our budget hearing from 6 to 7, and then we've just done our normal land use portion of our meeting at 7 o'clock. Is that your understanding that that's what we'll be doing?
That's also what I understand, but I'm making a note to make sure that that's clear, okay. And we send that out to everyone with the other materials you've
sure.
requested.
So obviously, any educators or anybody's welcome if you'd like to come from a budget side, but we won't plan to hear any educator program updates next month, because it'll be primarily focused on the 2022 budget. But again, that's for you and your department at your discretion. So yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, then we will conclude this portion of our meeting. And we'll resume in about 7 minutes in the Great Hall there with the land use items. Thank you to each of you for taking time out of your schedule to be here. Scott, it was good to officially meet you, and I wish you all well. We'll see you in the coming weeks. Thank you.
Thank you all.